Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Heather Henson.
Yay.
I am so glad to be chatting with you. This is fantastic. We are here in the outside the Charity Randall Theater,
mm-hmm.
where Ibex Puppetry's Flight will be premiering this weekend. Very excited about that. Just saw the run through. Fabulous show. Everybody needs to go and see this. What is it about puppets that are so appealing?
Well, I think they ignite the imagination of the audience that's watching them. Because we all know that they're just puppets, but in the hands of a puppeteer, it comes alive. So it's a kind of a magic. It's a kind of an everyday magic that I think everyone can get excited about and intrigued with. I mean, this is like, puppetry is intriguing to everyone at an early age. Because, you know, when you first have your toys you play with, you know, and you get that sense of excitement of having your stuffed animal come to life or your action figures. But then there's still that bit of magic that carries through even as an adult when you watch puppetry.
Indeed. So growing up as Jim Henson's daughter, was it inevitable that you would end up going towards a career in puppetry?
Necessarily. Actually, I went through all of college thinking I was going to be an animator, and I studied animation and illustration, but I found when I started to actually take the work and infuse it with my own ideas, when I got done with kind of doing assignments for school, and I started to just take my own ideas and try to put them together, I wanted that spark of life that comes with being a puppeteer and putting your own life force into it. I do love studio art, and I love visual art, and I love sculpture. And all of the arts that I was learning in an art school, but I needed to put them to life and make them move. And so I found myself like, oh man, I guess I'm just gonna go into puppetry. Yeah, I didn't think I was, but I did.
Now, youngest of five siblings, are any other of the Henson kids involved in the arts and puppetry?
Actually, surprisingly, I think we're all involved in some way or fashion. Yes, but not definitely in different facets. If we start from the top down, let me see. Lisa, she is running the company, so she has a great producer head to her, and she produces a lot of. She runs our company, the family Jim Henson company. But it's actually, I would say, then the next one down, Cheryl runs the foundation. We have a Jim Henson Foundation in New York. And so they fund a lot of, they put out seed grants to help support a lot of theater puppetry.
That's wonderful.
So she's going to theater, she's going to see puppet shows all the time. And she's very active in the community and really has her finger on the pulse of, like, almost every puppeteer in the United States and, you know, how the shows are coming together. And that's for pretty much for live theater. And then the next one, Brian, he is a great puppeteer, and he produces things as well as he performs, and he is a great, fabulous puppeteer and really has a great mind for putting together like new technologies into the craft of the age-old, you know, thousand-year-old craft of puppetry and then new technology. So he's been really on the cutting edge of all the animatronic work as well as the like kind of the digital puppetry, that world. So he's had his foot in both fields for as long as I've known him. No, not as long, but for a long time. And John is also a great artist. I have to say, he doesn't do puppetry, and he kind of shies away from puppetry, but he's a great artist. He's a really good artist, but he doesn't want to do puppets.
So what was it like growing up in the midst of the Muppets and Jim Henson magic? I mean, you've got to have some great stories.
Ooh, do I have stories? It was, you know, I think both my parents really supported the kids doing creative projects. Mm-hmm. And we always had a lot of craft projects going on. Actually, I was recently clearing out my mom's house, and we had tons. I couldn't believe how many craft projects there were. Batik sets and candle making sets and weaving and tons of different craft things. We had the entire basement floor was like Craft Central. And it was before Michaels existed, so a lot of these kits were not like easy to find.
Right.
Mill, you know? They were like kind of like mini versions of like a major artistry, you mm-hmm. know? But, and then we would all do them as a family. It was kind of fun.
That's great.
I was really young when the whole family did it as a group, so I was kind of like the little infant that was along. But it was a fun environment. I remember that basement. It was great.
So what inspired you to found Ibex Puppetry?
Well, I was inspired because I had to tour a show. And so I'd been doing lots of little shows, a little show here, a little show there. But when it actually came down to a business decision, when I had to deal with a slightly bigger structure, not really, it's a budget thing, but it's more like it's just a structure and organizational thing to kind of get a crew to stay with me and do multiple shows, I would realize like, ooh, I have to actually have a company for mm-hmm. this. Because I'd been doing shows a lot, but they were just one-off shows and, you know, really small shows. But I was doing a ton of those, like in little small theater venues in New York and in Rhode Island and wherever I could, mainly puppet slams, like which are thing I can talk about later, but little one-off like 10-minute shows. And then when I actually had a show that then we were going to do in a number of cities and put together a team of five people, we toured them. And then I was like, okay, I gotta actually make this a little more official. And
now there seems with all of the Ibex productions to be a message, a very strong message, maybe environmental, mm-hmm. a lot of it, with a mission to make some positive changes and raise awareness. What have you seen as the result of the shows that you have produced through Ibex?
Good question.
Yeah.
What is the result of my shows? The results. Well, in Orlando, where we have a consistent audience, I mean, not consistent, because we're not always doing things there, but we do get repeat, the kids that come back and they'll say, like, I was with you in this thing. And so that's really fun. They'll remember things. And we do a lot of interactive things with the kids. Like, we'll do a show, but we do a lot of craft tables and opportunities for kids to make puppets and then perform with us with the puppets. So it's definitely fun to see those kids kind of coming back. Mm-hmm. Results. I mean, we brought the show into one of my favorite things is bringing it to the wild refuge system. So we brought the show. Because before, here it's an indoor show, but it has been an outdoor show. And bringing it to these places that they go to if they happen to be like a bird watcher or something, but then really trying to like let more people know about them and bring people into the environment is really important to me. So I think we've seen really good results from that too, by continuing to be a part of these annual wildlife festivals. Mm-hmm. That's been fun.
And this particular show that's opening here at the Charity Randall Flight, premiere, yes?
Yeah, it is. This is a premiere. Yeah.
We are fortunate to have this here in Pittsburgh. Now you have you been to Pittsburgh before? Have you visited us here in the past?
I have when I was in college.
It's been too long.
It has been too long.
We're glad you're back.
Yeah.
Now, I know you've been working very hard on this show, but have you gotten to go out and about, taken any good restaurants?
I have gone from my hotel to here, and that's it. Wow. That's all I've seen. It's nice. And the restaurant across the street, The Porch, is great.
Oh, good. Well, we got a plug for The Porch.
I love it. That restaurant is fabulous. It's really good.
Good. Well, we're thrilled to have you here, and we're excited to see the show.
That other restaurant, the Conflict restaurant.
Conflict Kitchen.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool. So I had some great food from North Korea. That was amazing. It was so cool. That restaurant's really neat.
Good. Yeah, I know. Like
That's
I said, you're
really unique.
you know, working on the show, you're indoors a lot, and just seeing the run through today, I mean, you've got a great team. Everybody seems like they are having a ball and are thrilled to be working on this. So what makes a good puppeteer? What are the qualities?
Ooh, good qualities. Good puppeteer. Being engaged, interested, invested. These people that this team that I happen to be working with, actually, they weren't puppeteers first. These were two exceptional kite flyers.
Mm-hmm.
They were world champion kite flyers. And so then, because the show is puppets and kites and dance, my team is actually built of two kite flyers and two dancers. And actually the kite flyer is a dancer as well. And one of the dancers is now a kite flyer. So that's where my pool is coming from, dancers and kite flyers. And then they're becoming puppeteers, and they're great puppeteers.
There really is an art to that, too. I mean, having seen some preview of the motions today and the kite work, you know, a lot of puppets, you know, can be strings or a hand, but these performers on stage are actually using air, in a sense, as a tool to animate these puppets. And that really, it has to be a skill.
And those kite flyers, I have to say that the kite flyers make great puppeteers because they're so specific and in artful in their manipulation of objects. And that's what the connection is, I think, between the kite flying and the puppetry, is that they're manipulating an object very with a zen quality. Like, they're getting in touch with that kite and they are anticipating how it's moving, and they're manipulating it with a absolute loveliness.
Yeah, so it's mesmerizing.
All of the kite flyers have been great puppeteers.
Everybody is working in this show, you included. And we should say, you came right off rehearsal. This, in fact, is your costume. This is mine.
You know? I like yours.
Thank you. You know, I may actually ask for your help in creating a Brian Edward puppet to host this show when I go on vacation. What do you think? But you know, my luck, everybody would probably watch it more, and then I'd be out of a job. You know? But hey, you know, the show lives on. But Flight is the story of a crane. What is the true message at the core of Flight?
So it is the message. It is a story of a whooping crane, which are highly, highly endangered. And there's many cranes on the planet, but in here in North America, we have sandhill cranes and we have whooping cranes. And the sandhills are doing really well. There's plenty of them because they eat corn, and we've got plenty of corn.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not that sensitive to their environment where they live, so they can live on golf courses and farms. Huh. But the whooping crane, they need a very specific kind of wetland, and they're much more restricted on the environment that they live in. And so because of our use of land in this country, we've like reduced the areas that they are happy in. And then their numbers have just gone down from a long time ago. They were hunting them.
Wow.
But their numbers, actually, at one time there was only 15 of them on the planet. And then now their numbers have gone up to about 400.
And we have them here in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a natural flock that flies from Wood Buffalo, Canada, down to Texas. And then there is a reintroduced flock that goes from Wisconsin down to Florida and Louisiana. And those cranes, humans, scientists, have gotten together. The Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership, which is some government and some private NGOs, have gotten together and have been breeding cranes and teaching them to fly behind ultralight airplanes and getting them. It's an amazing process. They actually teach them with puppets, and they dress in costumes so they look like cranes.
Look at that. People. It's kind of come full circle, puppetry and cranes.
Yes. And that is why I got so involved in this story in the first place, is because I was intrigued that someone was using puppets not just for entertainment but for biology and science and for saving the environment. I was intrigued with that, and I started learning more about it and saw that these people were making these great efforts to help the cranes learn their migration route. Because they teach them to fly behind the plane, and then the cranes go behind the ultralight from Wisconsin down to Florida, and then they get it in their head and they can do it by themselves. They only need to be taught once.
That's great.
And then they can pick it up. But it's a great use of puppetry, and I was intrigued with that.
Now, clearly the art of puppetry has evolved. As we had said earlier, it had been around for thousands of years, and certainly both yourself and your family have been part of the growth of the art. So where do you predict that it's going from here?
Well, it's never going to go away. I think people sometimes are concerned because, you know, there's not as many puppetry shows on television, or, you know, it kind of, it sways a little bit, pendulum sways, but puppets will always be around because people are always telling stories and mm-hmm. need objects to tell their stories with. Where is it going today? It's an interesting world, though. If you're interested in the world of technology, I mean, it's fascinating where CG is going. And I mean, when I go to a movie today, I don't even know how it's made. You know, I look at like some of those advanced, fancy movies. Like,
you and me both. I'm watching classics that are in black and white still. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but it's an interesting time to be a puppetry because there's a lot of hybrid work now of puppets and animation and that world.
Would a robot be considered a puppet?
You know, there's a lot of people that define it in different ways, mm-hmm. and Puppeteers of America has it defined a certain way.
What is your definition of a puppet?
Well, I think if it's being manipulated by a human, mm-hmm. it's a puppet. And if you're trying to put life into it through a human, is trying to act through it and bring it to life with emotion and trying to give that inanimate object a sense of life through manipulation, that's a puppet. But there's all sorts of technicalities now.
Yeah.
When you start removing that person, it used to be you would just have arm rods on it or sticks on it and you're manipulating it. But now you can manipulate it through, you know, this world of like CG stuff, and you're manipulating it with a Wii or whatever, you know. And now you can manipulate your CG puppet, computer generated puppet, with your hands because you got some infrared Wii that's seeing where your hands are moving. I mean, there's lots of that right now. I think people are just, what are you calling it? They're like hacking their Wii systems and able to do these things, which are almost puppetry, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you're manipulating a CG character with your motion. So is that puppets? I don't know. I mean, you're not, it's one, it's not an object, it's not an inanimate object, it's a CG thing. Is that inanimate? I don't know. Is a CG animation inanimate? It's not alive, but it's a bunch of pixels.
Yeah.
So
now,
I like puppets that are like, I mean, I like the object. I like I could manipulate this microphone. I mean, I like the
There's a tighter relationship there. There's a more of a connection, that human connection.
And I think that is in my philosophy of life, too. Like, I like, because I'm working with the environment, I like working with wood and feathers and stone and dirt. And I actually do like a lot of the objects that come from the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And even in this show, we have a lot of silk, bamboo.
The materials are great. You can see the texture, and that really does make a difference.
Yeah, and fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of fabrics in this show.
And how the air plays with the fabrics, and especially mm-hmm. the birds that are in flight. It's beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
And there is an opportunity, I believe, for individuals to create their own puppets when they come to see this.
Yes, there is. You come an hour before the show, we're going to have workshop tables set up here in this lobby area, and we have a little paper crane that we have that you can cut out and make, and then you can manipulate it and it flaps its wings. And then in the show we have a scene where one of our characters invites the audience to like all fly when we go to Crane City.
And you don't want to be caught without your puppet when that happens.
No,
so get here an hour early. Your crane.
It only takes about 5 minutes to make your crane. It's a very fast crane.
Puppets can be as complex as that CGI, or they can be as simple as 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Or even just, you know.
It's true. You can just make it your hand.
Brilliant. See, I'm mesmerized. This was an instant puppet by Heather Henson, ladies and gentlemen. I'm right here on this spot. Anybody can access that. That's great. So, who's your favorite Muppet?
I think at different phases of my life, I've taken on different favorite Muppets. When I was a kid, I did love Grover. I loved Grover as a kid. And now I like Kermit from like the late 70s. That means a lot to me, kind of like early 80s. Like I like, you know, I like my dad's Kermit, I have to say.
Yeah,
of course. It's a very home feeling. They're all wonderful.
They are.
I love them all. I think They're all great. I don't know. I really do love it. Walter from the latest Disney.
I haven't seen it, but I want to.
The next one, so. Yeah, the new one's going to come out.
Right, I got to catch up on the old one, too.
Oh, see the old one? It's not the old one. The new old one.
Yeah. Having grown up in the theater, I have always loved Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah.
And having directed theater.
That's so funny, and you in a tuxedo.
Right, but they do. They wore tuxes, I think, yeah. But having directed theater, you know, in my mind, they've always been in the back. You're like, oh, it was terrible, you know. My little critics, like the angel and devil on your shoulder, but I guess in this case they'd both be devils. I don't know, but those guys, hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious. So
well,
I mean,
when we worked with my dad's alma mater, there were two professors there, and they were convinced that they were an inspiration for my dad's.
Were they?
Walter. I don't know.
Well, that's the great thing about a puppet, you know, when you give them so much personality, like that, they are like people that we know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and sometimes they are inspired by people we know, and sometimes sometimes it's inspired by, you know, where do puppets come from, you know, where do the characters come from. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is directly from people we know, sometimes it's a personality within us that needs to come out.
Indeed. So we encourage everybody to come on down this weekend and see the premiere, the world premiere of Flight here at the Charity Randall with Heather Henson and company. It is an experience indeed.
Yes.
Thank you. It was delightful talking with you today. In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvavant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvavant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvavant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.